A beautiful manor house in the country, a pleasant spring day, and everything is at peace. What's the catch?
Catch, Mum?
Oh, come on, there has to be something wrong with this place. No demon army hidden in the basement?
Not in this house, Mum.
So, is there an evil beetle overlord in one of the cupboards?
Not in the cupboards, Mum.
Ah, in the dining room?
No, Mum. No evil beetle overlords are in the dining room.
Latimer, are there any evil beetle overlords anywhere within the footprint of the house, below or above it, in the grounds or within a 100-mile radius?
No, Mum.
And none are scheduled to arrive at any point during our stay here by any means of transportation, teleportation, time travel, or interdimensional portal?
None are scheduled to arrive, Mum. In fact, I can assure you most wholeheartedly that I have made this manor house even safer than when I first arrived.
Splendid. Tea and Jeopardy with Emma Newman. There's always time for a nice cup of tea and a spot of mild peril. Well, hello there, my lovelies. I do hope you're well and haven't been accosted by an aging movie star whilst posing for pictures. I'm Emma Newman, and I'd like to welcome you into my secret tea there for polite conversation, abject geekery, a cheeky bit of cake, and of course, a nice cup of tea. Well, this early Victorian manor house is just as lovely on the inside as its exterior suggested, and I am delighted to find that this airy drawing room is south-facing. No hedge maze, thank goodness, just boughs of wisteria around the window, heavy with flowers. Do pull up a chair, there are plenty to go around. It seems the owner has a passion for flowers, judging by the decor. The wisteria motif can be spotted all over the place. Oh. I do hope this house doesn't belong to one of the...
I'm sorry to disturb you, Mum, but your guest has arrived, a Miss Catherine Valente.
Oh, splendid. Let's see her calling card. Oh, what a magnificent card. Such beautiful gold calligraphy, with griffins rampant. Gorgeous. Catherine M. Valente, Heather New Ways to Say Shit. I wasn't expecting that.
Ah, an expletive on the calling card. Should I fetch the brandy, Mum?
It is a bit early, Latimer.
That's not what you usually say, Mum.
I've no idea what you mean, Latimer.
Well, I'm referring
to... Send her in.
Very good, Mum.
For those of you who don't know, Cat Valente is a New York Times best-selling novelist, short story writer, and poet. She has won numerous awards for her work, including the Andre Norton Award for YA Literature, the James Tiptree Jr. Award, and a number of Locus Awards, amongst many others. As part of the SF Squeakcast team, Kat won a Hugo Award 2 years in a row for Best Fancast.
Ms. Catherine Valente, Mum.
Hello, Kat. Do come and sit down. How are you?
I'm very well, Emma. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. Would you care for some tea?
Of course.
How do you take your tea?
A dash of cream, no sugar.
Marvellous. I'll pour. And I was wondering if you would like some Brazilian anthill cake.
I have never tried that. Does it have real Brazilian anthills in it?
You know, I'm so excited about this. I've never tried it either. But let me just cut into it. Can you see those little bits there that actually do look like ants? That they're not actually ants. I wouldn't be so cruel. They're actually chocolate chips.
I will absolutely have a slice then.
So it's just like a normal sponge cake, but with very tiny chocolate chips designed to look like ants, and then with like a chocolate glaze over the top. Somebody told me about this online, and I went and found the recipe, and Latimer the butler made one for us this morning. So here's a slice of cake.
Thanks so much.
Now, you're not allergic to chickens, are you?
No.
Oh, marvellous. Okay, well, they'll just stay over there in the corner in their little pen. They won't bother you. So in my invitation, I asked you to bring a curio with you. What have you decided to bring today?
I've brought my broken record player, which is a very lovely vintage-looking record player. But like many things that look vintage, it was quite dodgy on the inside, and it broke very quickly. And it looked so lovely that I wanted to do something else with it. I didn't want to just throw away this huge thing. So we've turned it into something we call the Vinylmancer. When we can't decide what to have for dinner or what to do on an evening or where to go, we make a cardstock disc with choices written on it and little pictures illustrating it. We put it on the turntable. There's a little sticker over the power button that says push to relinquish free will. And we have a little song that we play, and whoever is spinning it stops it when the person who is controlling the music stops the music, and whatever the arrow that I put a little golden arrow, which came out of a Christmas cracker, actually, on a certain portion of the turntable, wherever it stops, that's what we do.
That is quite incredible.
I'm pretty proud of it, honestly.
That's a much better way of coming to a decision about what to do than just sitting there and going, ooh, for ages. Yeah. That's brilliant. So you're already a New York Times bestselling author. You've won awards. You've had stories published in so many of the most respected SFF publications. I was wondering if you have a career milestone you'd really like to achieve next.
I would love to win a Hugo for fiction. The SS Squeecast won two for podcasting. I would love to win one for fiction. And honestly, the career milestones, every book is a career milestone. And I would like to just keep writing books that are difficult for me to write and challenging for me to write. A movie would be nice.
A movie would always be nice.
We can't have everything.
Now, obviously, as writers, it helps if we have a love of language. But I was wondering, if you could remove any word or phrase from the English language, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. Maybe
Oh, my goodness, but what would we do when we're doing interviews?
We would have to come up with some other thing to fill the space. You know, there are so many words that irritate me. But I think the little filler word, they dot my speech, like, and I was all, and, so maybe if even we just had a day of respite from that, that would be very interesting.
I understand that you're the eldest of five children.
I am.
What is that like? Because I'm an only child, and there is no part of my brain that can even fathom that.
I adore all my siblings. They're from my parents' second marriages, but I was six when the first one was born. They're full siblings as far as I'm concerned, and I love them very much. They're all very, very different people. One is in the Coast Guard living in Alaska at the moment. One is a professional chef in San Francisco. One is a soccer player. So it's all over the map. And the other one, paints houses at the moment. So it's just like having built-in friends, really. But I can say that as the oldest. If I were the middle child or the youngest, maybe I would not define it as having built-in friends. It certainly is a lot when it comes to Christmas time and that sort of thing. But, you know, I have a lot of memories from childhood of reading to my siblings and involving them in games, and I always just love them to pieces.
Oh, that sounds lovely.
It is lovely. I mean, I'm lucky to have great siblings. One of them could have turned out to be a jerk, but nobody did.
Yeah, I guess that's always the risk, and you can't send them back.
Yeah.
I always wanted an older brother.
I have not seen the idea of having an older sibling is very strange to me. Both my parents are oldest children, so I don't even have any older cousins. I was the first child born in my generation. I still have cousins who are 13 and 14. So I can't imagine having any familial relation of my own generation being older than I am.
You live on a small island off the coast of Maine. I live on a rather large island off the coast of Europe. I was wondering what life is like on a small island. Are there any particular challenges or particular benefits?
Somewhat less exciting than living on a large island. At the moment, a large challenge would be that there is about 6 feet of snow on the ground outside. It's certainly difficult to shovel it, to take the dogs for walks in it, to drive the car in it. We got stuck trying to get up a hill the other night. It's been a very difficult winter for that. It's been 3 weeks of steady snowing every other day and nothing's melted. But I would say the biggest challenge is just that we're separated from the mainland by a boat ride, and we don't control when the boats come and go. So you are owned by the ferry in a very real way. If you want to get groceries, if you want to go out for Valentine's Day, you have to wrangle the ferry schedule. And after the last one, you can't get home. That's just
yeah.
There is a water taxi, but they haven't picked up their phone outside of business hours in quite some time, so there functionally isn't a water taxi anymore.
Blimey. I asked on the Twitters, as I want to do when I'm about to have a friend come to take tea, if anyone has any questions, and someone asked, is it true that the secret for being a prolific writer is to live on an island?
It doesn't hurt. I think you do learn a lot living on an island about both community and isolation. It sort of pulls you back and makes you think about convenience and what you can do to be part of the community around you, or indeed choose not to be part of the community around you. I've moved a lot in my life. I've lived all over the world, and this is actually the longest 6 years I've been on Peaks Island. It's the longest I've ever lived anywhere since I was born. So I end up being kind of a first contact situation all the time, constantly going to these other planets and learning how to live there. And this has definitely been the Hoth of my of my travels. But it's also a little bit like living in a medieval village without the endemic sexism and racism and plague.
Phew! Hooray!
Yeah. So, you know, we all know each other, and we have an email list where we barter things, and everybody sort of puts on their strange little art exhibits, and it's quite a fascinating little community.
That sounds marvelous. So if you could have anyone in the entire world announcing your arrival every time you enter a room, who would it be?
Oh, my goodness. What a question. You know, the first name that pops into my mind is John Cleese. He has such an amazing voice. Maybe Tim Curry. Tim Curry, I think. Actually, I'm going to settle on Tim Curry.
Yes, but as Dr. Frankenfurter.
Obviously.
Obviously. Because, you know, really, because Dr. Frankenfurter. Oh, wow. Yes, that would be fabulous. In fact, that would just make every day better, wouldn't it?
You could not have a bad day.
No, you can, and you would just automatically be more fabulous.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, that's a nice choice. So March the 3rd, the fourth Fairyland book is coming out, is that right?
Yes, The Boy Who Lost Fairyland.
So the fourth one in a series, are you still just as excited on when it comes out? Or?
Yes, and just as terrified as many of them do. And this one's a bit different in that there's a protagonist switch for the first large section of the book. So it's a little bit of a standalone within the series. So I'll be very interested to see how people respond to it.
Excellent. And you've got another book coming out in August, which is, well, you've described it as Deco Punk Space Whales. What is Deco Punk?
Well, it basically is a lot like steampunk, but taking place during the 20s. The Art Deco period and dealing with the anxieties of that culture. But it is also, it's called Radiance, and it's an alternate history as well. So because I'm very bad at writing my own jacket copy for a couple of years now, I've been describing it as a Deco Punk alt history Hollywood mystery with space whales and a lot of actors.
Well, that sells it for me.
Yeah, so the whole solar system is as it is in pulp science fiction novels. So Venus is a water world, and Mars is sort of a giant ranch in the sky, and movies are made on the moon. So a documentary filmmaker disappeared on Venus, and it is the mystery of what happened to her.
That sounds really crazy and fabulous.
I hope it is both.
I'm so glad that's what I had in mind for Deco Punk, but I had other things in mind too, and I'm so glad that it was actually that. That's very cool. It's the first time I've heard the word.
I don't think I invented it, but I've been saying it a lot.
I like to ask friends who come to tea if they could choose a theme tune for their life, what would it be? And the reason I ask this is because the chickens who have been happily pecking away over in the corner over there are actually more than they appear to be. They're actually really quite talented chickens that seem to know every single song ever, and they will sing it to us.
Those are amazing chickens.
They are amazing chickens, and I still haven't figured out who sent them to me. It just said on the note, a secret admirer. No idea. I've had some guests speculate that they're telepathic chickens. We don't know. But anyway, it's something else when they sing songs. So let's see if they know the theme tune of Your Life. What would you pick?
I would pick the Galaxy Song, Monty Python's Galaxy Song.
I love that song.
I love it so much. And the way I first heard it was entirely too elaborate to hear a Monty Python song. And it was, in fact, my first contact with Monty Python. My school had sent us, I was 13, had sent us to Yosemite National Park for a field trip, a week-long field trip. Subsequent classes were poorly behaved, and so it was canceled. But we were the first ones and the last ones who got to go. And on the first night, our guides took us on a night hike all the way up through the mountains, through Mariposa Grove, which is all redwoods, and stopped at the top of this hill where you could just see more stars than I'd ever seen in my life in the Milky Way, and it was so beautiful. And the guide hit play on his early 90s boombox and played Galaxy Song in the dark for everybody. And I just thought, what is that song? That is such an amazing song. And that was how I found Monty Python, back in the times when you could think that you and your friends were the only people who knew about a thing like that.
Yeah, I did that at school as well. Because, you know, often there were only like two or three people at school who would know all of the words for the Monty Python songs. Yes. And it was one of those things, you know, I guess it's the beginning of geek community. Mm. But it is a marvellous song. So let's see, surely the chickens know the Galaxy Song by Monty Python.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
There we go. They know the Galaxy Song.
I am incredibly impressed. For a song about perspective, it certainly adds a new element to hear it out of chicken mouths.
Yes, yes, chicken eyes songs. It's definitely an experience. Well, let's just check. Oh, I'm afraid the teapot is empty.
Oh no!
But there is a little bit of anthill cake. If you'd like me to wrap it up for you to take with you.
Yes, please.
Marvellous. So, thank you ever so much for coming today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
And I hope that the next time that we see each other, we won't be subjected to the social horrors of, I'm sorry, I haven't a clue.
I hope we will be. I had more fun than I could possibly have imagined.
I had fun about 45 minutes in when I think all of the adrenaline ran out. And I just couldn't be terrified any longer, and then finally started to enjoy it. That was kind of crazy, wasn't it?
It was. But it was really just one of the best times I've ever had at a convention. And we did it again a few months later at WindyCon.
Did you? You did it again?
We did. I told Lee about it. We just decided that we should introduce this to more American conventions, which, of course, means there will be five people in the room who have heard, I'm sorry, I haven't a clue before, and everyone else will be very confused. But we did, and my partner was the MC, and it was pretty incredible. Shannon singing Bullet with Butterfly Wings to the tune of Let It Go from Frozen.
It's oh my God.
Thing I will not forget. But the best part for me was, as I said, about 5 or 10 people in the room had seen the show or listened to the show before. And enough that my partner decided he would try the What Do Points Mean call and answer. And those 10 people said prizes when they said What Do Points Mean. And then a little, I would say, 6-year-old girl in the front said, a peanut butter sandwich. So we've decided that when played in North America with no actual British people on the panel, that is the answer to What Do Points Mean, a peanut butter sandwich.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's adorable.
Oh, that's brilliant. So a predominantly American audience, how did they receive it? Did they enjoy it?
Yeah, they did, very much. They really got into it. I think that, Mornington Crescent didn't go over quite so well. I had no idea what was going on. There was another one that I thought didn't quite come off. I can't remember which one it was. But there was a game or two that didn't quite go the way we thought, because we didn't really realize how much having listened to these games before would matter. But for the most part, it went off wonderfully, and there was a lot of uproarious laughter, and it was a great time.
I really like the kind of rise of games at conventions instead of just panels.
I think it's wonderful.
It's really fun for the people doing it as well as the audience, and I think that kind of the opportunity to entertain purely is really nice.
It is, and to get a chance to write just straight comedy, which, I mean, many of us have comic aspects to our books, but that's very different than writing just jokes, and being able to perform that way, as you say. And I think also for the audience, they get to see a side of authors that they wouldn't normally see on a panel where everyone is very professional and doing a topic that they've done a number of times before. And I think it's very cool.
It's good to see us ritually humiliated from time to time.
Yes.
Definitely. If you would like to follow Latimer, he'll show you the way out. I hope that I will see you at a convention sometime soon.
I hope so too.
Take care now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This way, Mom.
Ooh, what an interesting box. Wonder what's inside.
I would advise reading the instructions first, Mom, before taking any action.
Do not open this box. There's another box inside.
And another note, Mom.
You must have opened the first box. Please do not open this one.
Oh.
This one's velvet. And on top of that is another note that says, "Oh dear, I'm afraid I will have to resort to capital letters. Please do not open this box for the sake of all that is good in the world."
Now, Mom, before you do anything, I must insist that you read the final note.
"Clearly you are unable to resist opening boxes. I hope for your sake you are able to resist wearing this necklace. Do not, whatever you do, put it on."
Oh dear. Honestly, I don't see that I could have made it any clearer.
Oh, Latimer hasn't come back yet. I hope they're all right. Latimer, is everything okay?
Oh, yes, Mum. Nothing to see here.
Oh, my goodness, I didn't notice that Cat was wearing such a beautiful necklace. So many rubies. It looks very tight. It's not choking her, is it?
Oh, yes, it does appear to be choking her.
Well, do something, Latimer.
I already did, Mum. Four notes. Four. And they had no effect, despite an abundant use of firm language and capital letters.
Oh, she's taken out a makeup compact?
One must always look one's best, especially when being assaulted by a magical necklace.
But she's not putting the powder puff on her face. Why is she waving it in the air? And what's that sparkling trail it's leaving?
I believe she's summoning something, Mum. Perhaps we should step back a little. Ah, it's a ruby elemental. I wasn't expecting that.
It looks very stern.
"Stop it! Stop choking her! You're a very naughty necklace! Any more of that, and I'll be making you into a thong for the Harkonnens!"
Well, that seems to have done the trick. Now the necklace has calmed down, it looks very striking.
Yes, it all turned out well in the end.
Latimer, explain yourself.
It wasn't my fault, Mum. When I came upon the decapitated skeletons, I immediately surmised that the necklace was cursed.
Skeletons? You never mentioned skeletons.
I didn't need to, Mum. I had cleared them away long before you arrived.
But they were a warning.
Which is why I hid the necklace within several boxes with clear instructions not to open them.
How could you think that would work with a writer? Oh, thank goodness I didn't see it.
Indeed, Mum.
Well, at least she's left with a beautiful necklace and is looking even more fabulous. As Latimer tidies away the tea things, I'd like to raise my teacup to the newest members of the Order of the Sacred Teacup, Andy, Dee Franklin, Mark, and Michaela. I'd like to thank all of you for your support, and I'm delighted to say that we've just reached our fifth Patreon milestone. Should you wish to join the esteemed order and discover how Latimer became my butler, go to www.patreon.com/TandJeopardy. Before I go, would you permit me to tell you about a new audiobook that's just come out? It's called Those Rosy Hours at Mazandaran, written by Marion Grace Woolley, and I had the pleasure of narrating it. I think it's a fantastic book, and if you like your fiction very dark, it's for you. You can purchase it on Audible or through Amazon. Right, well, time to go. Find us a new location for the tea there, would you, Latimer? Somewhere without any sort of enchanted jewellery?
Very good, Mum.
You've just listened to an episode of Tea and Jeopardy, hosted by Emma Newman and co-written with Peter Newman. Go to www.teaandjeopardy.com to find previous episodes and www.patreon.com/teaandjeopardy to become a Bless Poppet.